Hi, my name is Isabel and I'm your host for the ESG Quick Takes podcast brought to you by ESG Book. March was a big month for corporate climate data in the United States. After 2 years of anticipation and thousands of comment letters from stakeholders, the SEC adopted its final climate disclosure rules. These rules require US public companies to disclose their GHG emissions, climate-related risks, and information about the plans to transition to a low-carbon economy. However, nothing is final just yet. The SEC climate disclosure rules are adopted, but remain subject of intense debate. Climate advocates argue that these rules are not prescriptive enough, as they only require companies to disclose the emissions from their own operations, scope 1 and 2, and not scope 3, and only if these emissions are material to a company. Others find the rule actually too far-reaching and duplicative of existing reporting requirements, and thereby an undue burden for companies. This ended up in court, and the SEC has now paused its rule to further avoid legal uncertainty. There's a lot to unpack here, and I'm joined by the perfect expert to talk about this, Pamela Marcogliese. Pamela is a lawyer and partner at Freshfields and advises clients on capital market transactions and disclosures. She's advised many Fortune 500 companies on shareholder engagement, ESG, and corporate governance matters. Hi, Pamela. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Isabel, for having me.
So for context, could you walk us through the key elements of the rule and what makes it so controversial?
Sure. So maybe I'll give a minute of background in terms of where we started. The rules were proposed about 2 years ago initially by the SEC, and they were very extensive. And the SEC received tens of thousands of comment letters on both sides, both in favor and against some of the elements of the rules. And so it really took the SEC a long time to eventually put out the final rules. The rules are much less extensive than they were when they were in their proposed form. I think the SEC tried to strike a bit of a balance. Where the final rules have come out is they essentially have three buckets of disclosure. The first one is in the nature of more descriptive textual disclosure. And so companies are required to talk about the risks relating to climate, their strategies relating to climate and transitions. They are, there are governance requirements where companies are required to talk about who at the board is in charge of supervising climate risks. Is it the full board? Is it a committee or a subcommittee of the board? And they also require a description of management's process for overseeing climate risks and escalating them to the board. Companies, if they have them, are also required to disclose their transition plans and any targets or goals if they are material and they have adopted them. The second bucket, which was extremely controversial in the original proposing release and which you touched upon in your intro, is the GHG emissions, where the rules have landed. And as you noted, is just scope 1 and 2 and only if they are material. There are other ways in which scope 3 GHG emissions might have to be disclosed, but that's sort of in a more indirect way. Like, for example, if you have targets or goals and those targets or goals include scope 3 targets or goals, then obviously that would pick up scope 3 emissions. And then finally, financial statement impacts. The SEC laid out a whole host of line items in the financial statements where if there is a 1% impact to those line items, companies are required to describe and quantify the financial impact to those line items. And that, of course, would be subject to the company's regular audit process. So they are controversial, I think, because, first of all, I think there is still a question in a lot of people's minds as to what is the materiality of all of this disclosure. Is it really going to be useful? What purpose is it going to serve? Secondly, I think there is pretty increased burden on companies to put together all of this disclosure. It's obviously going to require a lot of time. It's also going to require a lot of expense. I should have mentioned that the GHG emissions, they have to be certified by an attestation report. So you're going to have the attestation process. You're going to have the auditor process that's going to have to audit the quantifiable impacts to the financial statements, and then the entire apparatus for putting together the controls to collect all of this data in a reliable way year over year. So I think companies are very focused on the amount of time it's going to require. And then, as we will talk about in a little bit, these rules don't come in a vacuum. There is obviously an entire global infrastructure that is that needs to be considered where companies are subject or could potentially be subject to these requirements in other jurisdictions.
Yeah, so talking further about that, California obviously adopted these climate disclosure rules earlier, and other states have been following this as well with similar rules. Isn't the US on a federal level not just kind of delaying the execution of this, and it's something that has to come? I'm thinking this as in, like, at some point, so many regions will have some form of climate disclosure rules in place that you might as well just start. How do you see that? Do you foresee states to move faster than the federal government, almost replacing the federal rulemaking in that regard?
So it's a really good question. And I think we still need to see how the challenges to the federal rules play out. But I think it's pretty clear that the European rules aren't going anywhere. They do allow for some flexibility on whether or not you can report in a different jurisdiction and have it satisfy the European rules, but it's not perfect equivalency. So there's still a question there. The SEC in its rule said, for the moment, there's absolutely no equivalency that's going to be permitted. You have to disclose under the SEC's rules. And California in its rules said that if you disclose elsewhere, as long as you're disclosing the same information that's required under the California rules, you can have equivalency. But of course, then you have to go through a process of figuring out if the rules are the same and whether or not you in fact can benefit from equivalency. So I think for the first while, until all of this shakes out, you're really going to have a patchwork of regulations that apply to companies. And honestly, many US companies are going to be subject to all three. I think that if the federal rule gets challenged and struck, if it gets struck down, I think that it is entirely possible you start seeing other states step in and to fill the vacuum. And I think it's not impossible to imagine you wind up in a world where you have a similar construct as you have in the privacy space, where you had California that started and a whole host of states that have since followed.
Interesting. And then we have a lot of work for, I guess, yeah, people like you, yourself, lawyers, experts, to help with this patchwork, as you say. I want to dive deeper into just looking at the US from a more broader perspective in the world. You mentioned the EU rules are not going anywhere, you said. Can you explain what sets the US apart in this regard? Why is the EU disclosure landscape so different from the United States? Just thinking that the SEC disclosure rule pertains to primarily scope 1 and 2, which is just a very small part of what companies in the EU are required to report. So why is it so different in terms of the attitude towards sustainability reporting in the EU and the US?
Yeah, so I think that there are a couple of factors. One is just philosophically, Europe has always been more prescriptive in terms of these kinds of disclosure regulations. And so I think if you look at Europe versus the US, the two jurisdictions just start from a different place. I think the other thing that you have here is that the disclosure requirements in the US mandate that the disclosures be included in SEC filings, and that subjects them to a much higher level of potential liability from a litigation perspective. And we know that the US is much more litigious, or at least historically has been much more litigious than Europe. And so I think there's just a heightened level. And so going back to your point about scope 1 and 2 versus scope 3 is just because of what scope 3 covers, meaning to say upstream and downstream, it's just inherently much more difficult to wrap your arms around and have really the correct degree of certainty around that data when you disclose it. And so I think it's really ripe for risk and potential litigation if that disclosure is materially incorrect. And so I think that is just another issue that I'm sure the SEC had in the back of its mind. And then another factor, I think, is just culturally, this country has been far out ahead on anti-ESG much sooner than most other places. And so I think there is just this tension in terms of, like, what is the place of ESG? And then when you add on top of that the political overlay, this is often a pawn in political discourse. And in an election year, you can see how that gets a little bit supersized. And so I think when you put all of those things together, you can see why the approach to ESG/climate in the US is just starts from a completely different place than where you are in Europe.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And then thinking about the EU, it's in some way useful because in the EU, they are further in terms of requiring and implementing those requirements, sustainability related disclosures. Is there anything in your mind and in your practice, and perhaps you have some anecdotal stories to share, things that the US can learn from the EU, both positive and negative, in terms of also things that don't work perhaps in the EU and that we shouldn't try to replicate in the US?
Well, I think the place that people struggle most for the moment with the EU is just the very extensive amount of disclosures. And it really does require a lot of processes. I mean, our clients have been working on getting themselves ready to comply with these rules for a while now. And it is really extremely extensive and requires a whole host of, as you mentioned before, advisors and time commitment. And I guess the question is, what I always think about is, what exactly are we trying to accomplish with these rules? Is it really disclosure for disclosure's sake? Or are we preparing disclosures that are ultimately going to be useful for some legitimate purpose? And I think there's really a question as to the amount of disclosure that winds up accomplishing that purpose. How much do investors / other stakeholders, depending on what purpose the rules serve, but how much disclosure really winds up being necessary to be able to accomplish the goals we're trying to accomplish?
So really the usefulness of the data that is created by all these disclosure requirements, that is, I think,
because at the end of the day, if you're preparing this disclosure for the investors are fundamentally going to be paying the cost of compliance. And so if you've got, if the benefit doesn't really outweigh the cost or doesn't weigh the cost in a way that's meaningful, I think there's really a question about what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm looking forward, you mentioned this before, it's a year of elections, actually many elections all over the world, but obviously the US will be front and center as it comes to a very interesting outcome, whatever it may be. What do you expect to happen with the SE climate disclosure rule now that it's also being litigated and the fact that this is indeed an election year? Do you expect this to be paused in a sense of perhaps making this more final and that we will see a finalization after the election happens? Or do you expect like even maybe a further weakening of the requirements to make it pass? What is your sort of very much high level thoughts on where we will see this going in the couple of next months and perhaps later?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And if I had a crystal ball, it would be amazing. But I guess my hunch tells me that there is a very decent chance that the rules get struck down. If I sort of read the tea leaves, we're in a political climate where this issue is a bit of a hot potato. This has now been put before the Eighth Circuit, which tends to be a little bit more of a conservative circuit. We have precedent on the share repurchase rules that got vacated just a few months ago and were, frankly, much less controversial than these rules. And so when you put all of that together and you look at some precedent Supreme Court case law, you start thinking that it's entirely possible that these rules get vacated. Now, going back to the conversation we had before, even if the SEC rule gets vacated, there's still a question about what happens to California. And by the way, in California, we haven't seen any implementing regulations yet. So it makes it impossible to comply with the rules because they're just too high level. It's hard to know what they really require. But I don't think Europe is going away. And so many companies are going to still be required to disclose under the European rules. And then I think that investors will continue to focus on and push companies to disclose information that is material. And so I think even if the SEC rules get struck down, I don't think it means that climate disclosure for US companies disappears entirely. But I also suspect that it's going to be a while before we have complete clarity on this and everything shakes out. I think it's just, we're so much in the beginning of all of these very significant disclosure requirements that I think it's going to really take a while before we know the path forward on all of it.
Interesting. So something to watch over time and perhaps also let some practices evolve.
as let some practices evolve. Although what we're also telling our clients is that it's not too early to start really preparing. So if you think you're going to be subject to the EU rules, as I said, many of our companies have already started preparing. If you don't think you're subject to the EU rules, I think it is still worthwhile taking a look at the SEC rules and trying to figure out where the biggest gaps would be, because if they do wind up not being struck down and companies have to comply, first of all, the compliance dates phase in, but the initial ones are not actually that far away. They would apply to fiscal year 2025. Mm-hmm. So as you think about collecting data for 2025, you sort of have to start putting those processes in place pretty quickly. And there, as we've been talking about, there are a lot of requirements. And so you don't want to be caught completely off guard on the off chance that these rules don't get vacated and that they continue to go into effect on the proposed timelines. So I think it gives companies a lot of peace of mind to know where the gaps are and where they would have to move quickly once there's a little bit more clarity on how things progress.
So don't fully ignore the requirements just yet.
I think it's fully ignore at your own peril.
Indeed, yeah. Well, thank you so much, Pamela Marcondes. Really appreciate you being with us. And we might have to check in with you again later to get updates. Thank you so much.
I suspect this is not the end of the story. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. Bye.